Mimics' aged face was streaked with sweat, his skin clammy and pale.
Colors.
Vivenna sat on a stool beside his bed, hands in her lap.
They have faded.
The two mercenaries waited with Parlin at the back of the room. The only other person present was a solemn nurse, the same woman who had informed Vivenna in a quiet voice that nothing more could be done.
I'm so cold.
Lemix was dying. It was unlikely that he would last the day. This was the first Vivenna had seen Lemix's face, though she'd often corresponded with him. The face looked wrong. She knew that Lemix was growing old. That made him a better spy, for few looked for spies among the elderly. Yet he wasn't supposed to be this frail stick of a person shaking and coughing. He was supposed to be a spry, quick-tongued old gentleman. That was what she had imagined. She felt like she was losing one of her dearest friends, though she had never really known him. With him went her refuge in Halandrin, her secret advantage. He was the one she had supposed would make this insane plan of hers work, the skilled, crafty mentor she had counted on having at her side. The nurse glanced at Vivenna.
He goes in and out of lucidity, my lady. Just this morning he spoke of you, but now he's getting worse and worse.
Thank you. You are excused,
my lady.
No, it is time to be princess. Lemix, I need you to pass on your knowledge. How do I contact your spy networks? Where are the other Idris agents in the city? What are the passcodes that will get them to listen to me?
Never. You can torture me all that you want. I won't give in. I'll never give in.
Oh.
Vivenna sat back. By design, the Idrian spy network in Halandrin was loosely organized. Her father knew all of their agents, but Vivenna had only ever communicated with Lemix, the leader and coordinator of the network. She gritted her teeth, leaning forward again. She felt like a grave robber as she shook Lemix's head slightly.
Lemix, look at me. I'm not here to torture you. I'm the princess. You received a letter from me earlier. Now I've come to you.
You can't fool me. Your torture is nothing. I won't give it up. Not to you.
A wave of color washed across the bed, over Vivenna, and pulsed along the floor before fading. Despite herself, Vivenna stepped back in shock. Another pulse came. It wasn't color itself. It was a wave of enhanced color. A ripple that made the hues in the room stand out more as it passed. The floor, the sheets, her own dress, it all flared to vibrant vividness for a second, then faded back to the original hues.
What in Ostri's name was that?
Biochromatic breath, Princess. Old Lemix has a lot of it. A couple hundred breaths, I guess.
That's impossible. He's Idrian. He'd never accept breath.
Denth shot a look at Tonk Fa, who was scratching his parrot's neck. The bulky soldier just shrugged. Another wave of color came from Lemix.
He's dying, Princess. His breath is going irregular.
He doesn't have...
Something grabbed her arm. Lemix had managed to reach up and take hold of her. He was focused on her face.
Princess Vivenna.
Lemix, your contacts. You have to give them to me.
I've done something bad, Princess. Breath. I inherited it from my predecessor. And I've bought more. A lot more.
God of colors.
I know it was wrong, but I felt so powerful. I could make the very dust of the earth obey my command. It was for the good of Idris. Men with breath are respected here in Halandrin. I could get into parties where I normally would have been excluded. I could go to the court of the gods when I wished to hear the court assembly. The breath extended my life, made me spry despite my age. Sorry, I've damned myself. I've gained notoriety through abusing the souls of others. And now I'm dying.
Lemix, don't think about that now. Names. I need names and passcodes. Don't leave me alone.
I'm damned. Someone take it. Please, take it away from me.
Ravenna tried to pull back, but he still held onto her arm. She shuddered, thinking about the breath he held.
You know, Princess, nobody really tells mercenaries anything. It's an unfortunate but very realistic drawback of our profession. Never trusted, never looked to for advice.
Vivenna glanced back at Dent. He leaned against the door, Tong Fa a short distance away. Parlin stood there as well, holding that ridiculous green hat in his fingers.
Now, if someone were to ask my opinion, I'd point out how much those breaths are worth. Sell them, and you have enough money to buy your own spy network, or pretty much anything else you wanted.
Vivenna looked back at the dying man.
If he dies, that breath dies with him. All of it.
A shame.
I will not traffic in the souls of men. I don't care how much they're worth.
Oh, suit yourself. Hope nobody suffers when your mission fails, though.
No, I couldn't take them.
It was true. Even the thought of letting someone else's breath mingle with her own, the idea of drawing another person's soul into her own body, made her sick. Vivenna turned back to the dying spy. His biochromo was burning brightly now, and his sheets practically glowed. It was better to let that breath die with him. Yet without Lemix, she would have no help in the city, no one to guide her and provide refuge for her. She barely brought along enough money to cover lodging and meals, let alone bribes or supplies. She told herself that taking the breath would be like using goods one had found in a bandit's cavern. Did you throw it away just because it had originally been acquired through crime? Her training and lessons whispered that she needed resources badly, and that the damage had already been done.
No, it just isn't right. I can't hold it. I couldn't.
Of course, perhaps it would be wise to let someone else hold the breaths for a time. Then she could think about what to do with them at her leisure. Maybe even find the people they had been taken from and give them back. She turned back, glancing at Denth and Tong Fa.
Don't look at me like that, Princess. I see the glint in your eyes. I'm not going to keep that breath for you. Having that much biochroma makes a man far too important.
It'd be like hiking about the city with a bag of gold on your back.
I like my breath the way it is. I only need one, and it's functioning just fine. Keeps me alive, doesn't draw attention to me, and sits there waiting to be sold if I need it.
Vivenna glanced at Parlin, but no, she couldn't force the breath on him. She turned back to Denth.
What kind of things does your agreement with Lemix provide for?
Denth glanced at Tong Fa, then glanced back at her. The look in his eyes was enough. He was paid to obey. He'd take the breath, if she commanded it.
Come here.
You know, Princess, if you give me that breath, then I could just run off with it. I'd be a wealthy man. You wouldn't want to put that kind of temptation into the hands of an unscrupulous mercenary now, would you?
If he runs off with it, then what do I lose? Take it.
Oh, that's not the way it works. Our friend there has to give it to me.
Vivenna looked at the old man.
I...
She began to command Lemix to do just that. But she had second thoughts. Austri wouldn't want her to take the breath, no matter what the circumstances. A man who took breath from others was worse than a slaver.
No. No, I've changed my mind. We won't take the breath.
At that moment, Lemix looked up, meeting Vivenna's eyes. His hand was still on her arm.
My life to yours. My breath become yours.
A vibrant cloud of shifting, iridescent hair burst from his mouth, puffing toward her. Vivenna closed her mouth, eyes wide, hair white. She ripped her arm free from Lemix's grip, even as his face grew dull, his eyes losing their luster, the colors around him fading. The breath shot toward her. Her closed mouth had no effect. The breath struck, hitting her like a physical force, washing across her body. Vivenna's body quivered with a perverse pleasure. She could suddenly feel the other people in the room. She could sense them watching her. And, as if a light had been lit, everything around her became more vibrant, more real, and more alive. Vivenna vaguely heard Parla rushing to her side.
Princess! Vivenna!
But, oddly, the only thing she could think of was the melodic quality of his voice. She could pick out each tone in every word he spoke. She knew them instinctively.
Ostri, god of colors, what have I done?
But surely we can bend the rules a little bit.
Ciri walked quickly beside Trilides. Trilides eyed her. The priest, high priest of the God King, would have been tall even without the elaborate mitre on his head. With it, he seemed to tower over her, almost like one of the returned. Well, a spindly, obnoxious, disdainful returned.
An exception? No, I do not think that will be possible, Vessel.
I don't see why not.
A servant pulled open the door in front of them, allowing them to leave a green-colored room and pass into a blue one. Trilides respectfully let her pass through the doorway first, though she sensed that he was displeased he had to do so. Ciri ground her teeth, trying to think of another avenue of attack.
Vivenna would be calm and logical. She'd explain why she should be allowed to leave the palace in a way that made sense, so that the priests listened to her. Look, couldn't I maybe go on one trip outside? Just into the court itself?
Impossible. If you lack for entertainment, why not have your servants sent for minstrels or jugglers? I'm sure they could keep you occupied.
Couldn't he understand? It wasn't lack of something to do that frustrated her. It was that she couldn't see the sky, couldn't run away from walls and locks and rules. Barring that, she would have settled for someone to talk to.
Let me at least meet with one of the gods. I mean, really, what is accomplished by keeping me locked up like this?
You're not locked up, Vessel. You're observing a period of isolation in which you can dedicate yourself to contemplating your new place in life. It is an ancient and worthy practice, one that shows respect for the God King and his divine monarchy.
Yes, but this is Helandrin. It's the land of laxness and frivolity. Surely you can see your way to making an exception.
We do not make exceptions in matters of religion, Vessel. I must assume that you are testing me in some way, for I find it hard to believe that anyone worthy of touching our God King could harbor such vulgar thoughts.
Less than a week in the city, and I've already started letting my tongue get me into trouble.
Ciri didn't dislike people. She loved to talk to them, spend time with them, laugh with them. However, she couldn't make them do what she wanted. Not in the way that a politician was supposed to be able to do. That was something she should have learned from Vivenna. Ciri wore a long, flowing brown skirt that covered her feet and had a train that trailed behind her. The priest was wearing golds and maroons, colors matched by the servants. It still amazed her that everyone in the palace had so many costumes, even if they were identical, save for color. She knew that she shouldn't let herself get annoyed with the priests. They already didn't seem to like her, and getting snappish wouldn't help. It was just that the last few days had been so dull. Trapped in the palace, unable to leave, unable to find anyone to talk to, she felt herself nearly going mad. But there would be no exceptions, apparently.
Will that be all, Vessel?
Trilides paused beside a door. It almost seemed like he found it a chore to remain civil toward her. Ciri nodded. The priest bowed. Ciri watched him go, arms folded. Her servants stood arrayed behind her, silent as always. She considered finding Blue Fingers, but no. He always had so much to do, and she felt bad distracting him. Ciri motioned for her servants to prepare the evening meal. Two fetched a chair from the side of the room. Ciri sat, resting as food was gathered. The chair was plush, but it was still difficult to sit in a way that didn't aggravate one of her aches or cramps. Each of the last 6 nights, she had been forced to kneel, naked, until she finally grew so drowsy that she drifted off. Sleeping on the hard stone had left a dull, persistent pain in her back and neck. Each morning, once the God King was done, she moved to the bed. When she awoke the second time, she burned the sheets. After that, she chose her clothing. There was a new array each time, with no repeated outfits. She wasn't sure where the servants got such a steady supply of clothing in Ciri's size, but it made her hesitant about choosing her daily costume. She knew that she'd likely never see any of the options again. After dressing, she was free to do as she wished, assuming that she didn't leave the palace. When night came, she was bathed, then given a choice of luxurious gowns to wear into the bedchamber. As a matter of comfort, she had started requesting more and more ornate gowns, with more fabric to use in sleeping. She often wondered what the dressmakers would think if they knew that their gowns were only worn for a few brief moments before being discarded to the floor, then eventually used as blankets. She didn't own anything, yet could have whatever she wanted. Exotic foods, furniture, entertainers, books, art. She only needed to ask. And yet, when she was finished, it was removed. She had everything and nothing at the same time. The interrupted sleep schedule left her bleary-eyed and tired. The completely empty days didn't help either.
If only there were someone to talk to.
But servants, priests, and scribes were all locked into their formal roles. That accounted for everyone she interacted with.
Well, except him.
Could she even call that interacting? The God King appeared to enjoy looking at her body, but he'd never given her any indication that he wanted more. He simply let her kneel, his eyes of his watching and dissecting her. That was the sum total of their marriage. The servants finished putting out her dinner, then lined up by the wall. It was getting late, almost time for her nightly bathing.
I'll have to eat quickly. After all, I wouldn't want to be late for the evening's ogling.
A few hours later, Ciri stood bathed, perfumed, and dressed before the massive golden door that led into the God King's bedchamber. Her anxiety brought her hair to a pale brown. She still hadn't gotten used to this part. It was silly. She knew what would happen. And yet, the anticipation, the fear, was still there. The God King's actions proved the power he had over her. One day he would take her, and it could come at any time. Part of her wished he'd just be done with it. The extended dread was even worse than that first single evening of terror. Blue Fingers eyed her. Perhaps, eventually, he'd trust her to arrive at the bedchambers on time. Each night so far, he'd come to escort her.
At least he hasn't shown up while I'm bathing again.
Ciri glanced at Blue Fingers.
A few more minutes, Vessel.
The man seemed to have a supernatural sense of time. She hadn't seen any form of timepiece in the palace. Neither sundial, metered candle, nor water clock. In Halandrin, apparently, gods and queens didn't worry about such things. They had servants to remind them of appointments. Blue Fingers glanced at the door, then at her. When he saw that she was watching him, he immediately turned away. As he stood, he started shuffling his weight from foot to foot.
What does he have to be nervous about? He's not the one who has to go through this every night.
Do things go well with the God King, then?
Ciri frowned.
I can see that you're tired a lot of the time. I guess that means you're very active at night?
That's good, right? Everyone wants an heir as soon as possible.
Yes, of course. It's just that you might want to be careful, Vessel. Keep your wits about you. Try to stay alert.
Her hair bleached the rest of the way white.
You make it sound as if I'm in danger.
What? Danger? Nonsense. What would you have to fear? I was simply suggesting that you remain alert. Should the God King have needs you should fulfill. Ah, see, now it's time. Enjoy your evening, Vessel.
With that, Blue Fingers pushed open the door, placed a hand on her back, and guided her into the room. At the last moment, he moved his head up next to hers.
You should watch yourself, child. Not all here in the palace is as it seems.
Ciri frowned, turning, but Blue Fingers plastered on a false smile and pushed the door shut.
What in Osir's name was that?
The usual fire crackled in the hearth, but it was smaller than previously. He was there. Ciri didn't need to look to see him. As her eyes grew more accustomed to the darkness, she could notice that the fire's colors, blue, orange, even black, were far too true, far too vibrant. Her gown, a brilliant golden satin, seemed to burn with its own inner color. Anything that was white, some of the lace on her dress, for instance, bent slightly, giving off a rainbow of colors as if seen through a prism. Part of her wished for a well-lit room where she could experience the full beauty of Biochroma. But, of course, that was not right. The God King's breath was a perversion. He was fed on the souls of his people, and the colors he evoked came at their expense. She undid the side of her dress, then let the garment fall to pieces around her. She then bowed herself down into her customary posture.
The least they could do is make certain the fire is large enough.
At night, in the large stone palace, it got chilly, despite the Helandrin tropical climate, particularly if one were naked.
Focus on Bluefingers. What did he mean? Things are not what they seem in the palace.
Was he referring to the God King and his ability to have her killed? She was well aware of the God King's power. How could she forget it, with him sitting not 15 feet away, watching from the shadows? No, that wasn't it. He felt he needed to give this warning quietly, without others hearing.
Watch yourself.
As if I needed something else to be confused about.
If Bluefingers had something to tell her, why hadn't he just said it? As the minutes passed, his words turned over and over in her mind like a restless sleeper. But she was too uncomfortable and cold to come to any conclusions. That only left her feeling more annoyed. Vivenna would have figured it out. Vivenna probably would have known instinctively why the God King hadn't chosen to sleep with her. She would have fixed it the first night, but Ciri was incompetent. She tried so hard to do as Vivenna would have, to be the best wife she could, to serve Idris, to be the woman that everyone expected her to be. But she wasn't. She couldn't just keep doing this. She felt trapped in the palace. She couldn't get the priests to do more than roll their eyes at her. She couldn't even tempt the God King to bed her. On top of that, she could very well be in danger, and she couldn't even understand why or how. In simpler terms, she was just plain frustrated. Ciri sat up in the dark room and looked at the shadowy form in the corner.
Will you please just get on with it?
Silence. Ciri felt her hair bleach a terrible bone white as she realized what she'd just done. She stiffened, casting her eyes down, weariness fleeing in the face of sudden anxiety. What had she been thinking? The God King could call servants to execute her. In fact, he didn't even need that. He could bring her own dress to life, awakening it to strangle her. He could make the rug rise up and smother her. He could probably bring the ceiling down on her, all without moving from his chair. Ciri waited, breathing with shallow anxiety, anticipating the fury and retribution. But nothing happened. Minutes passed. Finally, Ciri glanced up. The God King had moved, sitting up straighter, regarding her from his darkened chair beside the bed. She could see his eyes reflecting the firelight. She couldn't make out much of his face, but he didn't seem angry. He just seemed cold and distant. She almost cast her eyes down again, but hesitated. If snapping at him wouldn't provoke a reaction, then looking at him wasn't likely to either. So she turned her chin up and met his eyes, knowing full well that she was being foolish. Vivenna would never have provoked the man. She would have remained quiet and demure, either solving the problem or, if there was no solution, kneeling every night until her patience impressed even the God King of Helandrin. But Ciri was not Vivenna. She was just going to have to accept that fact. The God King continued to look at her, and Ciri found herself blushing. She'd knelt before him naked 6 nights in a row, but facing him unclothed was more embarrassing. Still, she didn't back down. She continued to kneel, watching him, forcing herself to stay awake. It was difficult. She was tired, and the position was actually less comfortable than bowing had been. She watched anyway, waiting, the hours passing. Eventually, at about the same time that he left the room every night, the God King stood up. Ciri stiffened, shocked alert. However, he simply walked to the door. He tapped quietly, and it opened for him, servants waiting on the other side. Ciri waited tensely. No soldiers came to arrest her. No priests came to chastise her. Eventually, she just walked over to the bed and burrowed into the covers, savoring the warmth.
The God King's wrath is decidedly less wrathful than reported.
With that, she fell asleep. Eventually, Lightsong had to hear petitions. It was annoying, since the wedding jubilation wouldn't even be over for another few days. The people, however, needed their gods. He knew he shouldn't feel annoyed. He got most of a week off for the wedding fete, copiously unattended by either the bride or groom. And that was enough. All he had to do was spend a few hours each day looking at art and listening to the woes of the people. It wasn't much, even if it did wear away at his sanity. Lightsong leaned his head on one fist, elbow on the throne's armrest. This room of his palace opened directly out onto the lawn. Harsh weather was rare in Halandrin, and a cool breeze blew in off the sea, smelling of brine. He closed his eyes. He dreamed of war again last night. Larimar had found that particularly meaningful. Lightsong was just disturbed. Everyone said that if war did come, Halandrin would easily win. But if that were the case, then why did he always dream of Tae Talir burning? Not some distant Idrian city, but his own home.
It means nothing. Just a manifestation of my own worries.
Next petition, Your Grace.
Lightsong opened his eyes. Both edges of the room were lined with priests in their coifs and robes. Where had he gotten so many? Did any god need that much attention? He could see a line of people extending outside onto the lawn. They were a sorry, forlorn lot, several coughing from some malady or another. A woman was led into the room. He'd been seeing petitioners for over an hour already.
I guess I should have expected this. It's been almost a week. Scoot, go tell those waiting people to sit down in the grass. There's no reason for them to all stand around there like that. This could take some time.
Larimar hesitated. Standing was, of course, a sign of respect. However, he nodded, waving over a lesser priest to carry the message.
Such a crowd waiting to see me. What will it take to convince the people that I'm useless?
What would it take to get them to stop coming to him? After 5 years of petitions, he honestly wasn't certain if he could take another five. The newest petitioner approached his throne. She carried a child in her arms.
Ugh, not a child.
Great one. Lord of Bravery.
Lightsong didn't speak.
This is my child, Halan.
As it got close enough to Lightsong's aura, the blanket burst with a sharp blue color, 2.5 steps from pure. He could easily see that the child was suffering from a terrible sickness. It had lost so much weight that its skin was shriveled. The baby's breath was so weak that it flickered like a candle running out of wick. It would be dead before the day was out. Perhaps before the hour was out.
The healers, they say he has death fever. I know that he's going to die. Please, Great One. Oh, please. It was brave, like you. My breath, it would be yours. The breaths of my entire family. Service for 100 years, anything. Please, please just heal him.
Lightsong closed his eyes.
Please.
I cannot. I cannot.
Thank you, my lord.
Lightsong opened his eyes to see the woman being led away, child clutched close to her breast. A line of people watched her go, looking miserable, yet hopeful at the same time. One more petitioner had failed. That meant they would get a chance. A chance to beg Lightsong to kill himself. Lightsong stood suddenly, grabbing the cap off his head and tossing it aside. He rushed away, throwing open a door at the back of the room. Servants and priests immediately followed after him.
Go!
Lightsong waved them away. Many of them showed looks of surprise, unaccustomed to any kind of forcefulness on their master's part.
Leave me be!
Colors in the room flared brighter in response to his emotion, and the servants backed down, confused, stumbling back out into the petition hall and pulling the door closed. Light Song stood alone. He placed one hand against the wall, another hand against his forehead. Why was he sweating so? He'd been through thousands of petitions, and many had been worse than the one he'd just seen. He'd sent pregnant women to their deaths, doomed children and parents, consigned the innocent and the faithful to misery. There was no reason to overreact. He could take it. It was a little thing, really. Just like absorbing the breath of a new person each week. A small price to pay. The door opened, and a figure stepped in. Light Song didn't turn.
What do they want of me, Larimar? Do they really think I'll do it? Light Song the Selfish? Do they really think I'd give my life for one of them?
You offer hope, Your Grace. A last unlikely hope. Hope is part of faith, part of the knowledge that someday one of your followers will receive a miracle.
And if they're wrong? I have no desire to die. I'm an idle man, fond of luxury. People like me don't give up their lives, even if they do happen to be gods.
Larimar didn't reply.
The good ones are all already dead, Scoot. Calmseer, Brighthue, those were gods who would give themselves away. The rest of us are selfish. There hasn't been a petition granted in, what, 3 years?
About that, Your Grace.
And why should it be otherwise? I mean, we have to die to heal one of them. Doesn't that strike you as ridiculous? What kind of religion encourages its members to come and petition for their god's life? It's ironic. We're gods to them only until they kill us. And I think I might know why the gods give in. It's those petitions, being forced to sit day after day, knowing that you could save one of them, that you probably should, since your life isn't worth anything. That's enough to drive a man mad. Enough to drive him to kill himself. Suicide by divine manifestation. Very dramatic.
Shall I call off the rest of the petitions, Your Grace?
Sure, why not? They really need a lesson in theology. They should already know what a useless god I am. Send them away. Tell them to come back tomorrow. Assuming that they're foolish enough to do so.
Yes, Your Grace.
Doesn't that man ever get mad at me? He, more than any, should know that I'm not a person to rely upon.
Light Song turned, walking away, as Larimar went back into the petition room. No servants tried to follow him. Light Song pushed his way through red-hued room after red-hued room, eventually finding his way to a stairwell and climbing up to the second story. This floor was open on all sides, really nothing more than a large covered patio. He walked to the far side, the one opposite the line of people. He stood there for a long time, looking out over the city toward the sea beyond. He had no desire, despite what he sometimes said, to leave his comfortable home in the court. He was not a man of jungles. He was a man of parties. But sometimes he wished that he could at least want to be something else. Lushweaver's words still weighed upon him.
You'll have to stand for something eventually, Light Song. You're a god to these people.
He was. Whether he wanted to be or not, that was the frustrating part. He tried his best to be useless and vain, and still they came.
You're a better man than you give yourself credit for being.
Why did it seem that the more he demonstrated himself to be an idiot, the more convinced people became that he had some kind of hidden depths? By implication, they called him a liar in the same breath that they complimented his presumed inner virtue. Did no one understand that a man could be both likable and useless? Not every quick-tongued fool was a hero in disguise. His life sense alerted him of Larimar's return long before footsteps did. Larimar rested his arms on the railing, which, being built for a god, was about a foot too high for the priest.
They're gone.
Ah, very good. I do believe that we've accomplished something today. I've fled from my responsibilities, screamed at my servants, and sat about pouting. Undoubtedly, this will convince everyone that I'm even more noble and honorable than they previously assumed. Tomorrow, there will be twice as many petitions, and I shall continue my inexorable march towards utter madness.
You can't go mad. It's impossible.
Sure I can. I just have to concentrate long enough. You see, the great thing about madness is that it's all in your head.
I see you've been restored to your normal humor.
Scoot, you wound me. My humor is anything but normal.
The pair stood silently for a few minutes, Larimar offering no chastisement or commentary on his god's actions. Just like a good little priest.
Scoot, you're my high priest.
Yes, Your Grace.
You really need to pay attention to the lines I'm feeding you, Scoot. You really should have said something pithy there.
I apologize, Your Grace.
Just try harder next time. Anyway, you know about theology and that sort of thing, correct?
I've studied my share, Your Grace.
Well then, what is the point, religiously, of having gods that can only heal one person, then die? It seems counterproductive to me. Easy way to depopulate your pantheon.
Well, it's complicated, Your Grace. Returned aren't just gods. They're men who died, but who decided to come back and offer blessings and knowledge. After all, only one who has died can have anything useful to say about the other side.
Hmm. True, I suppose.
The thing is, Your Grace, returned aren't meant to stay. We extend their lives, giving them extra time to bless us. But they're really only supposed to remain alive as long as it takes them to do what they need to.
Need? That seems rather vague.
Returned have goals, objectives which are their own. You knew of yours before you decided to come back, but the process of leaping across the iridescent wave leaves the memory fragmented. Stay long enough and you'll remember what you came to accomplish. The petitions, they're a way of helping you to remember.
So I have come back to save one person's life.
Lightsong felt embarrassed. In 5 years, he'd spent little time studying his own theology. But, well, that was the sort of things priests were for.
Not necessarily, Your Grace. You may have come back to save one person, but more likely there is information about the future or the afterlife that you felt you needed to share, or perhaps some great event in which you felt you needed to participate. Remember, it was the heroic way in which you died that gave you the power to return in the first place. What you are to do might relate to that somehow. You saw something, Lightsong. On the other side, the future is visible, like a scroll that stretches into the eternal harmonics of the cosmos. Something you saw, something about the future, worried you. Rather than remaining at peace, you took the opportunity that your brave death afforded you, and you returned to the world, determined to fix a problem, share information, or otherwise help those who continued to live. Someday, once you feel that you've accomplished your task, you can use the petitions to find someone who deserves your breath. Then you can continue your journey across the iridescent wave. Our job, as your followers, is to provide breath for you and keep you alive until you can accomplish that goal, whatever it may be. In the meantime, we pray for auguries and blessings, which can be gleaned only from one who has touched the future as you have.
And if I don't believe?
In what, Your Grace?
In any of it. That returned are gods, that these visions are anything more than random inventions of my brain. What if I don't believe that I had any purpose or plan in returning?
Then maybe that's what you came back to discover.
So, wait. You're saying that on the other side, where I obviously believed in the other side, I realized that if I returned, I wouldn't believe in the other side, so I came back with the purpose of discovering faith in the other side, which I only lost because I returned in the first place.
And that last one breaks down a little bit in the face of logic, doesn't it?
Yeah, a little bit.
Lightsong turned, eyes falling on the God King's palace, standing like a monument above the other court structures.
What do you think of her?
The new queen? I haven't met her, Your Grace. She won't be presented for another few days.
Not the person. The implications.
Your Grace, that smells of an interest in politics.
Blah, blah, blah. Yes, I know. Lightsong is a hypocrite. I'll do penance for it later. Now answer the blasted question.
I don't know what to think of her, Your Grace. The court of 20 years ago thought bringing a royal daughter here was a good idea.
Yes, but that court is gone.
The gods had thought melding the royal line back into Halandrin would be a good idea. But those gods, the one who believed they knew how to deal with the Idrian girl's arrival, were now dead. They'd left inferior replacements. If what Larimar said was true, then there was something important about the things Lightsong saw. Those visions of war, and the terrible sense of foreboding he felt. For reasons he couldn't explain, it felt to him like his people were barreling headfirst down a mountain slope, completely ignorant of a bottomless chasm hidden in the cleft of the lands before them.
The Full Court Assembly meets in judgment tomorrow, doesn't it?
Yes, Your Grace.
But contact Blushweaver. See if I can share a box with her during the judgments. Perhaps she will distract me. You know what a headache politics gives me.
You can't get headaches, Your Grace.
In the distance, Lightsong could see the rejected petitioners trailing out of the gates, returning to the city, leaving their gods behind.
Could have fooled me.
Ciri stood in the dark black bedroom wearing her shift, looking out the window. The God King's palace was higher than the surrounding wall, and the bedroom faced east, out over the sea. She watched the distant waves, feeling the heat of the afternoon sun. While wearing the thin shift, the warmth was actually pleasant, and it was tempered by a cool breeze blowing in off the ocean. The wind teased her long hair, ruffling the fabric of her shift. Should she be dead? She had spoken directly to the God King, had sat up and made a demand of him. She'd waited all morning for punishment. There had been none. She leaned down against the windowsill, arms crossed on the stone, closing her eyes and feeling the sea breeze. A part of her was still aghast at the way she had acted. That part was growing smaller and smaller.
I've been going about things wrong here. I've let myself be pushed about by my fears and worries.
Ciri didn't usually take time to bother with fears and worries. She just did what seemed right. She was beginning to feel that she should have stood up to the God King days ago. Perhaps she wasn't being cautious enough. Perhaps punishment would still come. However, for the moment, she felt as if she'd accomplished something. Ciri smiled, opening her eyes, and let her hair change to a determined golden yellow. It was time to stop being afraid.
I'll give it away.
Vivenna sat with the mercenaries in Lemix's home. It was the day after the breaths had been forced upon her, and she had spent a restless night letting the mercenaries and the nurse see to the disposal of Lemix's body. She didn't remember falling asleep from the exhaustion and stress of the day, but she did remember lying down to rest for a short time in the other upstairs bedroom. When she'd awoken, she'd been surprised to find that the mercenaries were still there. Apparently, they and Parlin had slept downstairs. A night's perspective hadn't helped her much with her problems. She still had all of that filthy breath, and she still had no idea what she was going to do in Halandrin without Lemix. At least with the breath, she had an idea of what to do. It could be given away. They were in Lemix's sitting room. Like most places in Halandrin, the room was swollen with colors. The walls were made from thin strips of reed-like wood, stained in bright yellows and greens. Vivenna couldn't help but notice that she saw each color more vibrantly now. She had a strangely precise sense of color. She could divide its shades and hues, understanding instinctively how close each color was to the ideal. It was like perfect pitch for the eyes. It was very, very difficult not to see beauty in the colors. Denth leaned against the far wall. Tungfah lounged on a couch, his colorful bird perched on his foot. Parlin had gone to stand watch outside.
Give it away, princess?
The breath. We will go out and find unfortunate people who have been raped by your culture, their breath stolen, and I will give each one a breath.
Denth shot a glance at Tungfah.
Princess, you can't give breath away one at a time. You have to give it all away at once.
Including your own breath.
That would leave you as a drab.
Vivenna's stomach churned at that. The thought of not only losing the new beauty and color, but her own breath, her soul. Well, it was almost enough to turn her hair white.
No, that's not an option then.
The room fell silent.
She could awaken stuff. Stick the breath inside a pair of pants or something.
Now that's a good point.
What does that entail?
You bring something to life, princess, an inanimate object.
That'll draw out some of your breath and leave the object kind of alive. Most awakeners do it temporarily, but I don't see why you couldn't just leave the breath there.
Awakening. Taking the souls of men and using them to create unliving monstrosities. Somehow, Vivenna felt that Austri would find that an even greater sin than simply bearing the breath. She sighed, shaking her head. The problem with the breath was, in a way, just a distraction, one she feared she was using to keep herself from dwelling on the lack of Lemix. What was she to do? Denth sat down in a chair beside her, resting his feet on the sitting table. He kept himself better groomed than Tong Fa, his dark hair pulled back into a neat tail, his face clean-shaven.
I do hate being a mercenary. You know why?
Vivenna raised an eyebrow.
No job security. The kinds of things we do, they tend to be dangerous and unpredictable. Our employers have a habit of dying off on us.
Though usually not from the chills. Swords tend to be the method of choice.
Take our current predicament. No more employer. That leaves us without any real direction.
Does that mean their contract is over? They know I'm a princess of Idris. What will they do with that information? Is that why they stayed here last night, rather than leaving? Are they planning to blackmail me?
You see that?
Yeah, she's thinking it.
This is exactly what I'm talking about. Why does everyone assume that when a mercenary's contract is over, he'll betray them? You think we go around stabbing people for the fun of it? Do you think a surgeon has this problem? Do people worry that the moment they're done paying him, he'll laugh maniacally and cut off their toes?
I like cutting off toes.
Oh, that's different. You wouldn't do it simply because your contract ran out, would you?
No, toes is toes.
Is there a point to this?
The point is, Princess, you were just thinking that we were going to betray you. Maybe rob you blind or sell you to slavery or something.
Nonsense. I was thinking nothing of the sort.
Oh, I'm sure. Mercenary work is very respectable. It's legal in almost every kingdom I know. We're just as much a part of the community as a baker or a fishmonger.
Not that we pay the tax collectors. We tend to stab them for the fun of it.
What I'm trying to say, Princess, is that we're not criminals. We're employees. Your friend Lemix was our boss. Now he's dead. I figure that our contract transfers to you now, if you want it.
Vivenna felt a slight glimmer of hope, but could she trust them? Despite Denth's speech, she found it hard to have faith in the motives and altruism of a pair of men who fought for money. However, they hadn't taken advantage of Lemix's sickness, and they had stayed around even after they could have robbed the place and left while she was asleep.
All right. How much is left on your contract?
No idea. Jules handles that sort of thing.
Jules?
Third member of the group. She's off doing Jules stuff.
How many of you are there?
Just three.
Unless you count pets.
She'll be back in a while. She stopped in last night, but you were asleep. Anyway, I know we've got at least a few months left on our contract, and we were paid half up front. Even if you decide not to pay the rest, we probably owe you a few more weeks.
So if there's anyone you want killed, now would be the time.
You're really going to have to get used to our terrible sense of humour, Princess. Assuming, of course, you're going to keep us around.
I've already implied that I'll keep you.
Oh, all right. But what are you going to do with us? Why did you even come to the city?
No point in holding back. They know the most dangerous secret. My identity. I'm here to rescue my sister. To sneak her out of the God King's palace and see her returned to Idris unharmed.
Ambitious.
Ooh, she is a princess. They tend to be ambitious sorts, I hear.
Ciri isn't ready to deal with Halandrin. My father sent her in my place, but I cannot stand the thought of her serving as the God King's wife. Unfortunately, if we simply grab her and go, Halandrin will likely attack my homeland. We need to make her disappear in a way that isn't traceable to my people. If necessary, we can substitute me for my sister.
Denth scratched his head.
Well?
A little bit out of our realm of expertise.
We usually hit things.
Or at least keep things from getting hit. Lemix kept us on partially just as bodyguards.
Why wouldn't he just send for a couple of Idris soldiers to protect him?
Denth and Tong Fa exchanged a look.
How can I put this delicately? Princess, your Lemix was embezzling money from the king and spending it on breath.
Lemix was a patriot.
That may have been the case, but even a good priest isn't above slipping himself a few coins out of a coffer, so to speak. I think your Lemix figured it would be better to have outside muscle rather than inside loyalists protecting him.
Vivenna fell silent. It was still hard to imagine the thoughtful, clever, and passionate man represented in Lemek's letters as a thief. Yet it was also hard to imagine Lemek's holding as much breath as he obviously had. But embezzling? Stealing from Idris itself?
You know, you learn things as a mercenary. You fight enough people, and you figure you start to understand them. You stay alive by anticipating them. The thing is, people aren't simple. Even Idrians.
Boring, yes. But not simple.
Your Lemek, he was involved in some big plans. I honestly think he was a patriot. There are many intrigues going on in this city, Princess. Some of the projects Lemek had us working on had a grand scope, and were good for Idris, as near as I could tell. And I guess he just thought he should be compensated a little for his patriotism.
Quite an amiable fellow, actually. Didn't want to bother your father. So he just did the figures on his own. Gave himself a raise, and indicated in his reports that his costs were far greater than they really were.
Vivenna fell silent, letting herself digest the words. How could anyone who stole money from Idris also be a patriot? How could a person faithful to Austria end up with several hundred biochromatic breaths? She shook her head wryly.
I saw men who placed themselves above others, and I saw them cast down.
It was one of the five visions. She shouldn't judge Lemek. Particularly now that he was dead.
Wait. You said that you were just bodyguards. What, then, were you doing helping Lemek with projects?
The two men shared a look.
Told you she was smart. Comes from not being a mercenary.
We are bodyguards, Princess. However, we're not without certain skills. We can make things happen.
Things?
We know people. That's part of what makes us useful. Let me think about this issue with your sister. Maybe I'll be able to come up with some ideas. It's a little like kidnapping.
Which we're not too fond of. Did we mention that?
Yes, bad business, no money. What were these projects Lemek was working on?
I'm not exactly sure of the whole of them. We only saw pieces, running errands, arranging meetings, intimidating people. It had something to do with work for your father. We can find out for you, if you like.
I do.
All right.
Denth walked past Tonk Fa's couch, smacking the large man's leg.
Tonk, come on. Time to ransack the house.
Tonk Fa sat up.
Wait. Ransack the house?
Sure. Break out any hidden safes. Search through papers and files. Figure out what old Lemek was up to.
He won't care much, being dead and all.
Vivenna shivered. She still wished she'd been able to see that Lemek got a proper Idrian burial rather than sending him off to the Halandran charnel house. Having a pair of toughs search his belongings felt unseemly. Denth must have noticed her discomfort.
We don't have to if you don't want us to.
Sure. We'll never know what Lemek was up to, though.
Continue. But I'm going to supervise.
Actually, I doubt that you will.
And why is that?
Because, now, I know nobody ever asks mercenaries for their opinion, but you see...
Oh, just get on with it.
Today's the day when the Returned hold their court assembly, Princess.
So?
So, it's also the day when your sister will be presented to the gods. I suspect that you'll want to get a good look at her, see how she's holding up. If you're going to do that, you'll want to get moving. Court assembly will begin pretty soon.
Vivenna folded her arms, not moving.
I've been tutored about all these things, Denth. Regular people can't just walk into the court of gods. If you want to watch the judgments at the court assembly, you either have to be favoured or one of the gods, be extremely influential, or you have to draw and win the lottery.
Oh, true. If only we knew someone with enough biochromatic breaths to instantly be considered important and therefore gain entrance to the court without being questioned.
Ah, Denth. Someone has to have at least 50 breath to be considered worthy. That's a terribly high number.
And how many breaths do I have?
Oh, around 500 or so. At least that's what Lemek claimed. I'm inclined to believe him. You are, after all, making the carpet shine.
Vivenna glanced down, noticing for the first time that she was creating a pocket of enhanced color around her. It wasn't very distinct, but it was noticeable.
You'd better get going, Princess. You'll be late.
Ciri sat nervously, blonde with excitement, trying to contain herself as the serving women did her hair. Her marriage jubilation, something she found rather inappropriately named, was finally over, and it was time for her formal presentation before the Halandran gods. She was probably too excited. It hadn't really been that long. Yet the prospect of finally leaving, if only to attend court, made her almost giddy. She would finally get to interact with someone other than priests, scribes, and servants. She'd finally get to meet some of the gods that she'd heard so much about. Plus, he'd be there at the presentation. The only times she'd been able to see the God King had been during her nightly staring matches, when he was shrouded in shadow. Today, she would at last see him in the light. Ciri smiled, inspecting herself in a large mirror. The servants had done her hair in an amazingly intricate style, part of it braided, the rest allowed to flow free. They'd tied several ribbons into the braids and also woven them into her free-flowing hair. The ribbons shimmered as she turned her head. Her family would have been mortified at the ostentatious colors. Ciri grinned mischievously, making her hair turn a brighter shade of golden blonde to better contrast with the ribbons. The serving women smiled approvingly at the transformation. Ciri sat back, hands in her lap, as she inspected her clothing choices for the court appearance. The garments were ornate, not as complex as the one she wore to the bedchambers, but far more formal than her everyday choices. Red was the theme for the serving women and priests today. That made Ciri want to choose something else. Eventually, she decided on gold, and she pointed to the two golden gowns, having the women bring them forward so she could look at them more closely. Unfortunately, as she did so, the women fetched three more golden dresses from a rolling wardrobe out in the hallway. It was as if they were determined to keep her from having a reasonably simple choice. She just hated seeing so many options disappear each day. If only...
Could I try them all on?
The serving women glanced at each other, a little confused. They nodded toward her, their expressions conveying a simple message. Of course you can. Ciri felt foolish, but in Idris she'd never had a choice before. She smiled, standing and letting them take off her robe and then dress her in the first of the gowns, careful not to mess up her hair. Ciri inspected herself, noting that the neckline was rather low. She was willing to splurge on color, but the amount of flesh Halandrin showed still felt scandalous. She nodded, letting them take off the gown. Then they dressed her in the next one, a two-piece garment with a separate corset. Once they were finished, Ciri eyed this new outfit in the mirror. She liked it, but she wanted to try the others as well. So, after spinning about and inspecting the back, she nodded and moved on. It was frivolous. But why was she so worried about being frivolous? Her father wasn't around to regard her with that stern, disapproving face of his. Vivenna was an entire kingdom away. Ciri was queen of the Halandrin people. Shouldn't she try to learn their ways?
She smiled at the ridiculous justification, but went on to the next gown anyway.